So today I want to talk about bank funding. And as you may be aware, last week the Reserve Bank published a bulletin article that documented recent developments in the structure and costs of the funding of the Australian banking system. And we've published an article on that topic annually for a few years now, and we report regularly on developments in bank funding in our quarterly statements on monetary policy. So what I want to do today is just talk to that article and highlight some of its main findings. So the discussion around bank funding costs can get confused at times. It's often unclear whether a participant in this debate is referring to movements in levels or in spreads, and if they're talking about spreads, it's not entirely clear what exactly the spread is relative to. So the purpose of the article and my speech today is to provide some facts that can serve as a common foundation for discussion. So the main points I want to highlight are that the level of the cash rate set by the Reserve Bank is a primary determinant of the level of intermediaries' funding costs and hence of their lending rates. However, there are some other significant influences on intermediaries' funding costs, such as risk premia and competitive pressures, which are not directly affected by the cash rate. So over the past year, funding costs have fallen in absolute terms or in level terms, but have risen relative to the cash rate. And the fact that it's gone down in level terms but up in spread terms has been a bit of a source of confusion, I think. One key point that we highlight in the article, which I'd like to spend a bit of time talking about today, is that deposit pricing, particularly for term deposits, has been the major driver of recent changes in funding costs, reflecting the strong competition in the deposit market. That development of higher deposit rates, or relatively higher deposit rates, has obviously been welcomed by the savers in the population, of which I am not one. There has been a rise in the spreads on wholesale debt issued by banks, reflecting investors' concerns about the global banking industry. While spreads have narrowed recently, they are still higher than they have been over the past couple of years. So let me start with the first point. So the cash rate set by the Reserve Bank Board each month is the short-term interest rate benchmark that anchors the broader interest rate structure for the domestic financial system. It's the front end of the risk-free yield curve off which other financial assets are generally priced. When the cash rate is adjusted up or down by the board, the whole structure of interest rates in the economy moves up and down, with the effect most direct at shorter maturities. But the cash rate is clearly not the only determinant of the rate structure in the economy. And just to give three examples where rates move differently from movements in the cash rates. So obviously, as one moves further out along the term structure of the risk-free curve, term premia play an increasing role. Risk premia are obviously also an important component of borrowing costs for private sector entities, both businesses borrowing from banks, but the banks themselves in accessing capital markets. Competitive pressures in the deposit market also play an important role. Those sort of determinants of the rate structure are not directly affected by movements in the cash rate. So as I will discuss shortly, over the past few years, competitive pressures in the deposit market and risk premia for the banking sector globally have risen substantially. These have had a material impact on the costs to banks of funding their lending book. And while these developments are not the result of movements in the cash rate, the Reserve Bank Board, as it said repeatedly, takes these developments into account in its setting of the cash rate to ensure that the structure of interest rates in the economy is consistent with the desired stance of monetary policy. Moreover, the link between movements in the cash rate and lending rates in Australia is much tighter than in many other countries. If I take the US as an example, movements in the Fed funds rate, although there's not a lot of them at the moment, but anyhow, movements in the Fed funds rate have a much less direct influence on 30-year fixed rate mortgages than do movements in the cash rate in Australia have an effect on variable rate mortgages. So while the link is not obviously 100% in Australia, it's a hell of a lot tighter than it is in a lot of other countries. So let me talk a bit now about the composition of banks' funding, and we've talked about this a few times over the last couple of years. So the funding structure of the Australian banking system has changed markedly over the past few years. So just split it up into sort of five main categories here: deposits, short-term wholesale, long-term wholesale, equity, and then securitisation, which does also include covered bonds as well as MBS. So obviously, there's been a fairly marked change, obviously from this picture, there's been a fairly marked change over the past few years. Deposits have become a much larger share of overall funding, rising from a little under 40% in 2007 to 52% currently. The rise in the share of deposit funding has come at the expense of a decline in the share of short-term wholesale funding from around 30% to 20% currently. Now, this funding structure is for the banking system as a whole. It's not that of any particular financial institution. And when we talk, and the analysis we present in the article, and I'll talk about today, on the cost of funding is for funding this aggregate structure, and it will certainly differ institution by institution. The regional banks generally fund a larger share of their books via deposits and have significantly decreased their use of securitisation. Credit unions and building societies continue to raise the vast majority of their funds via deposits. So the major change in the funding structure, as I said, is of the larger banks has been the switch from short-term wholesale to deposits, although they've recently increased their use of long-term secured issuance, most obviously in the form of covered bonds. Within deposit funding, there has been, and this is true of all banks, there has been a marked shift towards term deposits, which pay higher interest rates than other forms of deposits. Indeed, term deposits, so what we show here, so this is the term deposits as share of total deposits in the Australian banking system. We've split it up by a few different sorts of investors. So the blue down the bottom are businesses, the green are corporates, the purple are super funds, the orange are interbank deposits, and then the light blue is green, and the silver-coloured one is other non-bank financial institutions. So you can see that everyone, pretty much everyone, has increased their holdings of term deposits, and including even the government, and most obviously the household sector, the superannuation sector, which never used to hold much in the form of term deposits, and the corporate sector. So term deposits have accounted for most of the growth in bank deposits since the onset of the financial crisis. And then as this graph shows, they now account for about 44% of the major bank's deposits, up from 30% in the middle of 2007. So we've gone from 44% of something which is 52% of overall funding, up from 30% of something which was 40% of overall funding back in 2007. So the increase in the share of deposits, and particularly the term deposits, reflects a number of interrelated factors. First, clearly, banks have offered relatively attractive rates to depositors. Second, strong business profits have resulted in large corporate cash holdings, which have been increasingly invested in deposits rather than in other financial instruments, and particularly short-term bank paper. And third, households have significantly increased their term deposits placed directly with banks instead of investing in other financial assets. And as you can see from here, superannuation funds have also increased the share of funds they're allocating towards deposits. Now, some part of the rise in corporate deposits and in superannuation fund deposits reflects as much a change in name as a fundamental shift in funding structure. So instead of holding an exposure to the banking system that is called short-term wholesale debt, some corporates and super funds hold the very same exposure in the form of a term deposit. So it's the same product, it's just called something different. This reflects pressures from regulators, rating agencies and the market for financial institutions to be more deposit funded, because deposits are assessed to be more stable, even though we're talking about the same investor here, so the behavioural response is probably pretty much exactly the same. From the bank's point of view, term deposits have the advantage of generally being a relatively stable funding source. The average contractual maturity of term deposits is fairly short, at somewhere between 4 and 7 months. But these term deposits are typically rolled over a number of times, so the effective maturity is more around a few years. From the bank's point of view, the rates on new term deposits can also be adjusted quickly to influence the growth in this sort of funding. However, to some extent, this is a double-edged sword, because the term deposits have a relatively short contractual maturity, changing in the pricing flows through the whole term deposit book very quickly. So what that means is that while we've seen big movements in wholesale funding costs, which I'll come to shortly, it's actually been the movements in term deposits which have had the most material impact on banks' costs of funding over the last few months, certainly since the middle of last year, because as the banks reprice those term deposits, that flows through very quickly, whereas when they have to reprice their wholesale funding book, that takes a hell of a lot longer to wash through. So while most of the competition among banks has been for term deposits, Banks have also offered more attractive transaction and savings accounts, as you're probably all aware. They're paying higher interest rates on these accounts, and they offer greater functionality than they did in the past. The increase in the value of funds invested in these deposits has largely been placed in online saver accounts and accounts with introductory bonuses. Banks have reported little growth in the value of low-interest transaction-style deposit accounts. One thing which is sort of interesting to think about in this respect is that at-call online saving accounts are assessed to have much more rapid runoff rates under the Basel III liquidity standards. So from the bank's point of view, come the beginning of 2015, they will not be quite so attractive a form of deposit because the runoff rates assumed on an online account is much, or particularly an at-call online account, is much faster than it is for just a regular deposit. So the banks will have to hold more liquidity against that. So that doesn't seem to be affecting the pricing of these products yet. If you look at some of the rates you can get on an online at-call account at the moment, it's not entirely clear how the bank's making any money out of that in some cases. But as the new liquidity rules come into effect, one would expect to see that pricing, or at least the product design, start to change. But it's certainly not happening yet. So having talked a bit about the structure of funding, I now want to turn to the actual cost of that funding. So the Reserve Bank uses a wide range of sources to derive our estimates of banks' funding costs. We use data reported by the banks to APRA and banks' regular profit statements to the market to track the composition of funding. We monitor the prices offered on various forms of deposit accounts, and we do that by actually just either wandering around the street or by ringing banks up as customers, which I'm sure you all do, all of the banks do as well, in monitoring their rivals' account costs of deposits. And we maintain a comprehensive database of wholesale funding, which is updated issue by issue. We supplement all of this with extensive consultations with financial institutions, both big and small. The analysis I'm about to show contains our best estimates, but that's what they are, they're estimates. There is necessarily a degree of imprecision around them. And our estimates are for the system as a whole and not that for any particular financial institution. So all that said, in summary, our estimate is that the absolute level of banks' funding costs in terms of levels fell from mid-2011 to now, but by less than the reduction in the cash rate. So in level terms, the cost of funding fell relative to the cash rate, it went up. There were particularly pronounced increases in the relative cost of term deposits and long-term wholesale debt as financial markets conditions deteriorated in late 2011. So let me start with deposits and show you what's going on here. What's showing here is the rate you get on an at-call savings account and on a term deposit special, which is, you know, so the special is the one which has the highest rate across the term structure. So, you know, if you often find that there's a spike in term deposit rates at, you know, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, so that's what the one we're tracking here. So it varies month by month as to what the maturity actually is. Nevertheless, you can see, particularly for at-call savings accounts, they've gone from paying 150 basis points below the cash rate, because that's the relevant money market rate here, to something which is basically flat to cash or potentially even above cash. And you can see for the term deposit rates, again, a marked increase in the relative cost of those products. So competition for deposits, which had moderated somewhat in early 2011. So you can see there was a big run-up in 2008, again in sort of the first part of 2010, and then it sort of backed off through late 2010, early 2011. This is the blue line at the top. And then you can see in late 2011, it ramped right back up again. So between mid-2011 and now, our estimate is that while the cash rate has fallen by 50 basis points, the major bank's average cost of deposits has declined by only about 25 basis points. So deposits as a source of funding have risen by about 25 basis points relative to the cash rate. So that's aggregating this across all sorts of deposits. The average spread above market rates on the major banks' advertised specials has increased by about 35 basis points over the past year. So if you take from the middle of 2011 till now, it's gone up by about 35. Furthermore, there's been an increase in the share of deposits written at rates higher than the rates advertised by banks. And that's meant that the average rate on outstanding term deposits has not fallen as quickly as benchmark rates as term deposits have rolled over. That is, banks have been increasingly paying customers more than the rate advertised in the window. So when you go and you see the term deposit sheet advertised in your local bank, you should be able to go in and extract at least another 10 basis points off them. Moreover, there's been some shortening in the average maturity of term deposits recently, given the inverted yield curve, which has meant that changes in pricing are passed through even more quickly. The average advertised rate in our call savings deposits rose by around 20 basis points relative to the cash rate over 2011. Again, in absolute terms or in level terms, the interest rate declined, but in spread terms or relative to the cash rate, has gone up. So taking into account an increase in the proportion of savings deposits earning bonus rates, the average rate on these deposits is estimated to have increased by between 35 and 50 basis points relative to the cash rate. Interest rates on transaction accounts, which generally don't pay you much interest at all, have not fallen in line with the cash rate, but that's basically because they can't, because they play something close to zero. What that means is, though, that as the cash rate comes down, because those things are basically bounded at zero, relative to the cash rate, they're actually becoming more expensive as the cash rate comes down, just because you can't lower them any further. Let me now talk a bit about wholesale debt. This table, and try to illustrate, helps to illustrate the difference between levels and spreads, and goes through where pricing's gone since the middle of last year, and also over the course of this year. So, particularly if you look at the top, so this is the cost of issuing 5-year wholesale in the middle of last year was about 160 relative to CGS. So, I'm using CGS as the risk-free benchmark rather than swap, partly because swap relative to risk-free rates or relative to the cash rate has been moving around too. But nevertheless, you can see on the right-hand column, yields have actually fallen. In the middle column, though, spreads have gone up again. So spreads from the middle of last year to the beginning of this year went up by about 150 basis points, even though the yield actually fell 3 basis points because CGS yields came down so far. Since the beginning of this year until now, you can see there's been a fairly large decline in spreads. For covered bonds, you can see that the issues at the beginning of the year, which were fairly expensive, and then the March 12 number I've got there is for ANZ's deal last week. Now, obviously, it's a 4-year deal and not a 5-year deal, and there is some term premium between 4 years and 5 years, but it ain't 90 basis points. And then finally, down the bottom is the cost of issuing offshore. So again, you can see in level terms, all of these things have fallen. In spread terms, they've all gone up, and they've all gone up quite a bit. So the increase in spreads on banks' wholesale funding reflects global investors demanding more compensation for taking on bank credit risk, although the rise for the Australian banks has been less marked than it has been for other banks globally. There's also been an increase in the costs associated with hedging the foreign exchange risk on new foreign currency denominated bonds. So the numbers down the bottom, the offshore issuance costs include the cost of swapping that back into Aussie. So this rise in the basis swap reflected the dearth of kangaroo issuance earlier in the year at a time when the Australian banks were raising foreign currency debt. The recent pickup in kangaroo issuance looks like it's alleviated some of that pressure. As you can see, since the beginning of the year, spreads on banks' new wholesale debt have come down following, and I think the main trigger there has been the ECB's 3-year long-term refinancing operations. But notwithstanding that narrowing, they still remain noticeably higher than in mid-2011. So while the relative cost of new long-term wholesale funds is currently higher than that of the bank's existing books, this has had only a moderate effect on the major bank's average bank funding costs relative to the cash rates. I'm talking about now is in between marginal funding costs and average funding costs, which is yet another source of confusion. This reflects the fact that it takes at least 3 to 4 years for the major bank's existing stock of bond funding to be rolled over. So while they're issuing at higher spreads now, since the middle of last year, the banks have refinanced about 1/8 of their total books. So only about 1/8 of that has been refinanced at these higher spreads. So as a result of that, the cost of major banks' outstanding long-term wholesale debt is likely to have risen by about 25 basis points relative to the cash rate over the past year. Short-term wholesale debt is mainly priced off 1-month and 3-month bank bill rates. And while these rates generally fell, again, in level terms over the latter half of 2011 due to the sharp fall in the expected cash rate over that period, there was an increase in the cost of short-term debt relative to the expected cash rate as measured by the bill's OIS spread. The increase in that spread also contributed to a higher average cost of long-term wholesale debt relative to the cash rate, given that most of the debt is benchmarked to short-term bank bill swap. These pricing conventions ensure that changes in the cash rate and expectations about its future level have a direct effect on both short and long-term wholesale funding costs. As you're all probably aware, the spread between bank bills and OIS has narrowed noticeably since the start of the year, and the reduction in spread reflects in part the reduction in short-term issuance because of the higher level of long-term issuance. So the banks use short-term wholesale issuance as somewhat of a buffer. So when global markets are dislocated, like they were at the end of last year, tend to issue more onshore short-term debt, that drives up the cost of short-term debt, which is probably also rising at the same time, at least in relative terms, because of the tensions which are causing that dislocation in global markets. So conversely, and this is what's been going on over the last couple of months, as conditions improve and the banks are able to issue more long-term debt, short-term issuance declines because they don't need to be issuing that as a sort of buffer for their funding. So that reduces the spread in addition to the downward pressure that's coming from the improved market sentiment. So if the current lower spread between bank bills and OIS is maintained, this should alleviate some of the upward pressure relative to the cash rate on the bank on the costs of funding banks' aggregate loan books. So let me now try and pull all that together with this picture. So what I've got here is our estimate of the total rise in funding costs relative to the cash rate on the top left, deposits on the top right, short-term wholesale, bottom left, long-term wholesale on the bottom right. So the picture on the top left shows that compared to mid-2007, the average cost of the major banks' funding is about 120 to 130 points higher relative to the cash rate. As you can see from the picture, most of that increase occurred during 2008 and early 2009, when the financial crisis was at its most intense. Since the middle of 2011, as you can see there, there's been a further increase relative to the cash rate of the order of 20 to 25 basis points. The other point to note, if you look at the other three panels, is where the source of that rise is coming from. It's mostly coming from the top right. So a fairly large part of the increase in total funding costs is coming from the cost of deposit funding. Now, the increase in funding costs relative to the cash rate differs across institutions given differences in their funding compositions. But then, for instance, the available evidence suggests that the overall increase in the regional banks' funding cost is much larger than that experienced on average by the major banks, mainly reflecting the larger increase in the cost of the regional banks' deposit funding and the fact that they have deposits make a much larger share of their overall funding. So I mostly talked about funding costs. Let me talk briefly in closing about developments in lending rates, and the Bulletin article that we put out last week goes into this in a bit more detail. The cost of funding is the most important factor that influences the lending rates banks set, but there are a number of other factors that affect pricing, including credit risk, liquidity risk, and choices about growth strategies in different market segments. So for close to a decade prior to the global financial crisis, banks' overall costs of funds followed the cash rate closely as risk premia in markets were low and stable. Accordingly, interest rates on business and housing variable rates tended to adjust in line with the cash rate. Nevertheless, over this period, there was a gradual decline in the spread between average interest rates paid on loans and the cash rate. So, for example, for the standard mortgage rate, the difference between that and the cash rate declined from 275 basis points in 1996 to around 125 basis points in 2007. So lending rates relative to the cash rate fell by around 150 basis points between 1996 and 2007. So it has gone in the opposite direction at points in the not-too-distant past. Since the onset of the financial crisis, banks have increased the spread between lending rates and the cash rate for all loan types. The increases have varied across the different types of loans, partly reflecting differences in the reassessment of the riskiness of those loans. But the primary factor driving the increase in the spread between lending rates and the cash rates has been the increase in the relative cost of funding that I've been talking about. Financial institutions have increased their lending rates in the face of the increase in costs to maintain their net interest margins within the range, so keeping their net interest margins within the range observed in recent years. In turn, that has been with the aim of maintaining profitability. Now, in closing, I'd just like to make one final point, which is, what we're not trying to do with this analysis is seeking to answer the question as to whether or not those movements in lending rates are appropriate, whatever appropriate means. The aim of the analysis we put out last week and what I'm talking about today is just to provide the facts about what's been going on with banks' funding costs and what's been going on with their lending rates, not trying to answer the question as to whether the exact size of the movements in their lending rates on different products has been has been appropriate. All we're trying to do, as I said, is to provide the facts that helps may help facilitate a discussion around that, and at least provide some common facts so that people are at least talking on the same page. So with that, let me finish, and happy to take some questions. So, thanks. So, anyone would like to ask a question? Yep. So one of the other regular publications we do, which has come out in next quarter's bulletin, is on bank fees. So we look at that annually as well. So, yes, we do spend a fair bit of time looking at that. I mean, part of what I was saying at the end, though, is, you know, we are not, you know, the banks have their own models of setting lending rates, and there are a whole lot of things which go into that. And we look, certainly, do we look at the different components of it? Yes, we do. But ultimately, you know, we're not sitting around their pricing, you know, their tables when they're pricing up all these products. But do we look at the components which are affecting them? Yeah. And bank fees is another area that we publish research on annually. Sure, in the back. I don't know. I mean, this is. I think where mortgages were priced going back, you know, back to the early 90s. If you look at the spread on that, you could probably say that that was, you know, that was obviously high. And it's come. And it, I mean, I don't know what's sustainable. And ultimately, that's determined by a whole bunch of things, including the structure of the market, and the cost of funding. You know, on a number of occasions, it's been said that, you know, risk premia were too low, particularly in the period, obviously, in the few years leading up to 2007. Whether they're right now, I don't know. They were probably too compressed, you know, in the mid-2000s. It's hard to say whether, you know, it's not clear whether they're correctly priced now. Sorry, someone else had their hand up. Yep. I don't have a... I'm not sure I have a good answer to the first part, where I suspect it's still probably going to go higher from here than where it is now as a result of a number of pressures, both regulatory and market pressures. Though, as I said, one point, which is sort of, if you think about short-term wholesale debt, which is the point I made earlier, if you're a corporate and you've decided that you want to... you've got, you know... The corporate treasuries are now investing or placing their money in term deposits rather than buying short-term bank debt. It's the same investor making the same decision. The behavioural response is not really that different. So, you know, we're looking at whether short-term wholesale debt should be lower or not. And just reclassifying short-term wholesale debt as a deposit doesn't necessarily improve the stability of the financial system if it's exactly the same investor making the same same decision. One thing I do think you're likely to see is there's going to be more product redesign around deposits as particularly the effects of the liquidity regulations come in. I think we've still got a fair way to run on that process over, you know, between now and 2015. So I think, to answer your question, deposits are likely to be probably a higher share than they are going forward, but I think you're also likely to see that the design of those deposits is different, particularly in terms of the online at-call accounts, than what you're seeing currently. Michael.
Guy, you attributed the improvement in recent times in funding spreads to at least partly, the LTRO activities of the ECB. To what extent do you think that the aggregate balance of exchange settlement accounts at the ECB is a good indicator of how quickly that money is being put to work?
I actually talked about this last time I gave a speech. It's not. But it's a question which a lot of people keep on asking. I don't think it's any indication at all. And basically the way that reflects the structure of a central bank balance sheet. When the ECB puts out its LTRO, it's got an asset, which is the repo it's done with the institution which borrowed from it, and it generates something on the other side of the account, which is of its balance sheet, which is a deposit, which is held by the banking system. Those two balance sheets have to balance. So the banking system's deposits with the ECB has to be whatever they're put out into the market. What matters in terms of how effective it is how many how much that money is recycled before it comes back to the ECB, to put it that way. But at the end of each day, the ECB's balance sheet has to balance. They average over a month, so certainly at the end of each month it has to balance. So reporting that the banking system deposits with the ECB has gone up by X billion, all that's telling you is the net effect of the ECB's liquidity operations. It's not telling you how much banks are hoarding or not putting that to work in the economy. In the end, no matter what they do with it, it has to come back as a deposit with the ECB. Yep. Down in the corner. Yeah, I think people will talk about this a bit later on today, but we know that the share of foreign ownership of CGS has gone up over the last couple of years, and has gone up again in the last in the December quarter. It's now somewhere around 75-ish% of the stock on issue. Michael can certainly answer that question more precisely than I can, but it's somewhere around that. So the share of now, what's driving that? I suppose you'd have to ask the investors, but it does seem to be the case that sovereign wealth managers are investing more in Australian dollars than they did in the past. And so you have to ask them as to why they're doing that. What effect is it having on the exchange rate? Well, definitionally, it's probably higher than it otherwise would be. But one thing which to take into account is that if you look at the composition of capital flows in the Australian economy, into the Australian economy, there's been a decline in the share of of net foreign purchases of bank debt. So because of the change in the bank's funding structure, the fact that they are funding more of their balance sheets through deposits and less through short-term wholesale, there's been a decline in foreign ownership of Australian government debt, at least in relative terms. And that's been replaced by increased ownership of CGS. So there's been a change in the composition of the capital flows as well. So to try and work out the net effect on the currency, you have to take into account both of those two factors, so which makes it a much trickier question to work out what the net impact on the currency is. Anyone else? Yeah.
Because of funding cost pressure, does the RBA stand ready to cut the cash rate to offset that rise in funding costs?
Well, as I said, and we've said repeatedly, we take into account the overall structure of lending rates in the setting of monetary policy. So that is a factor in the bank's, in the board's decision every single month, along with a whole bunch of other factors. So, it, you know, as the structure of lending rates changes, the board takes account of that in their deliberations, as they've said on a number of times.